I'm tired of Barack Obama and Mitt Romney.
That's why you're crying? Oh, it'll be over soon, Abby. Okay? The election will be over soon, okay?
Okay.
Oh.
Welcome to the Abby edition of It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elby.
And I'm Ken Rudin. And Ron, explain to me why she was crying.
She was crying because she'd been riding along in her mother's car, as so many children are forced to do, and listening to NPR. In fact, I think she was listening to our podcast.
Mm.
And she heard too much Barack Obama.
Too much Ron Elving.
Too much Ken Rudin.
Kenny Rudin.
She
knows me as Kenny.
I understand. So yes. Many do. And and for such good reasons. And let's just say that the reason everyone is ready for next Tuesday to be the end of this election season is because it's been going on too long, too intensely, in too many places, and we've all been hearing it all. Let's make the point that it may not be over next Tuesday, and this, while it should be the last podcast before we know who the next president is going to be, might not be.
Well, it will be the last podcast before most of America has made a decision on November 6th, so we do know that. So we will have 33 Senate seats, all 435 House seats.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Again this year, all 435.
I know. And I have a list here of all 435 House races in Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, California, Colorado.
All right. So much for your list. Let's talk also, before we leave, I know a lot of the listeners...
Before we leave, we haven't started yet.
I know a lot of the listeners really tuned in to hear about the ballot initiatives.
Well,
good luck.
But the point is, there are three states where same-sex marriage is on the ballot and which has never been approved by the voters ever, and it could pass in Maine and Maryland, perhaps.
And it has never passed in any state where it's been on the ballot.
Right. The only places where same-sex marriage has become law is either because of state legislatures or the judiciary. But let's start with the presidential race, because that's one everybody, including Mitt Romney, is concerned about.
That is correct. And the big event this week in the presidential election had nothing to do with the presidential election.
Well, it was the October surprise that everybody feared, nobody expected, of course, hence the term surprise.
Mm-hmm. And hence the term.
Hence
October.
The term. Hence the term. But it seems to have created a mini dynamic in the presidential race.
All right. What we're talking about, of course, is the tragedy of the hurricane Sandy.
Let me interrupt you for a second. We will sound, obviously, because this is a political podcast, we will be talking about Sandy in political terms. There is terrible devastation, terrible loss of life.
73 people so far have lost their lives just in the United States alone.
We are not trying to be crass here, but this is just a political podcast. I just want to point that out.
That's right, Ken. And obviously, we're going to be turning now to the rather crass consideration of how this affects the presidential election. And from the point of view of politics, what was incredible was to see 72 hours in which the campaigns were really overshadowed by another story entirely.
Yeah, Mitt Romney, I don't think, knew what to do because he was helpless in this, whereas President Obama went from the campaigner-in-chief to the commander-in-chief, and while during a presidential campaign it's often hard to tell the difference between the two, and I'm not saying that politics was not on Obama's mind during his trips to the devastation of New Jersey and things like that, but he looked presidential. He did what he was supposed to do, and if he was racking up political points at the same time, well, so be it.
So some of that mini-dynamic we're talking about was on view when the president physically went up and toured the damage with Chris Christie on Wednesday. And we got this kind of tape out of that.
I want to thank the president for coming here today. Really important to have the president of the United States acknowledge the kind of suffering that's going on here in New Jersey, and I appreciate it very much. We're going to work together to make sure we get ourselves through this crisis, get everybody back to normal. So, Mr. President, thank you for coming, sir.
Okay, let me just come around.
And there were so many visuals, so many comparisons when we saw Governor Christie, who was the Republican keynote speaker at the convention, and President Obama. Look, nobody's denying the fact that there are political benefits here. And not only for President Obama, Chris Christie, if he runs for re-election next year, is thought to be in a tough race. He's still in a blue state. He still has to win re-election. I think Cory Booker, the mayor of Newark, is rumored to run against him.
There you go.
So it's not only about 2016, but if you think of all the governors in the way of the path, you have Bob McDonnell, you have Martin O'Malley, you have Chris Christie, you have Andrew Cuomo, all potential 2016 candidates.
Interesting that the one that could do the most good for Barack Obama's reelection campaign was Chris Christie, and that when they went after him, Christie was so responsive.
I've seen a lot of stuff talking about how there's a rift between Christie and Romney because the famous hug with Barack Obama. Remember the hug by Charlie Crist.
Killed his career.
Killed his career. But this is a hug that could save his career. But not only is somebody who's one of the leading Romney surrogates around the country, but somebody somebody who's been blasting Obama for weeks about lack of leadership, lack of presidential stuff, and yet who gave him a better endorsement in some ways than Chris Christie.
In a visual sense. Sure. No, he's never going to come out and say he's changed his vote. Going to do that. But it's the visual, and that's what allowed the story to change from first the campaign and all this focus on Romney and is he on the march to, of course, the superstorm, Sandy, the damage, the personal tragedy, to Christie and Obama, which brings us out then of the storm period of focus and into this post-storm period of aftermath. Of course, you have to stay at it. You can't just get off the campaign trail entirely.
Not with a handful of days to go.
So Mitt Romney held in Ohio an event which was called a relief rally, a relief event. Here's a little bit of the tape from that event.
I've had the chance to speak with some of the governors in the affected areas, and they've talked about a lot of people having hard times. And I appreciate the fact that people right here in Dayton got up this morning, some went to the grocery store I see and purchased some things that these families will need. And I appreciate your generosity. It's part of the American spirit, the American way to give to people who are in need. And your generosity this morning touches my heart.
And I guess you could say Romney had been on the defensive for much of the week, or at least part of the week, over his previous statements saying that it's not the federal government's role about FEMA. It's really state and local initiatives.
And even private sector.
Private sector, right. So.
And a number of reporters who were covering Romney this week were trying to get him to respond to questions about whether or not that was still his position regarding FEMA.
And this all fits into the narrative that Romney would rather not talk about, because there are a lot of issues that I think somewhat convincingly he has shifted gears on, about women, about Latinos. He's certainly had a more centrist, more moderate tone.
Moved to the middle.
In the campaign, which we always thought he would do.
Because, isn't that what everybody does, move to the middle in the fall campaign?
But the problem with Mitt Romney, of course, as we've said over and over again, is that he has this history of switching sides, as he did from when he ran for the Senate in 94, when he ran for governor in 2002. He was more of a moderate centrist Republican. He was certainly more conservative when he ran for president in 2008 and again in 2012 in the Republican primaries and caucuses. And now shifting to the middle, but even with only a handful of days to go, his rhetoric in the past about FEMA reminds voters once again that which is the authentic, which is the real Mitt Romney.
Now, the early voting issue has been huge this fall. More people supposedly are voting early than ever have before, more people voting absentee, more people voting by mail, and this is really a popular trend, especially in the West. So how much of that is being disrupted by this enormously disruptive storm?
Well, in many of the states that were hit by Sandy don't have early voting, like New York, for example, doesn't have it. Virginia early voting was curtailed a little bit. I think there's some extension of that. Some of the days have been extended.
Maryland, District of Columbia, they canceled a couple of days of early voting.
Not to make this even more crass than we were saying before, but a lot of people say that, well, these states that have been affected by Sandy, Maryland, New Jersey, New York, are blue states, and therefore perhaps maybe that hurts Obama. Or you could also make the case that the Jersey Shore, that seems to have been obliterated, were big McCain counties in 2008, so maybe it hurts the Republicans.
Now, we don't expect there to be any suspense about the ultimate winner in Maryland or New Jersey or New York, but the number of votes that come out for Barack Obama in those states matters enormously to this question we'll get back to in a moment. Will he win the popular vote even if he wins the Electoral College?
Yeah, and that has never happened in our history, where somebody is actually elected president and receives fewer popular votes. That has not happened.
Of course it's happened. As you know, it's happened. It happened in the year 2000.
Really? I don't remember that far. We didn't have a podcast then.
We didn't have a podcast then, and yet there was an American Republic, and you were actually gainfully employed in some senses as journalist. And you know what we went through for 5 weeks with Al Gore and George W. Bush.
And I know you said that we're going to talk about this later, but now that we're talking about it now, I know that if Mitt Romney wins more popular votes, and that's possible, it makes me think that it's possible.
Not all polls, but many polls show either that Romney is a point or two ahead.
In the national popular vote.
In the national popular vote, which many laymen think of as the election. And we also are shown in many other polls that it's tied. So anything could happen.
And yet Romney does not have any lead in any of the key battleground states. Maybe a little bit in Florida, Virginia's in some
North
polls.
Carolina, in North Carolina, unless you already given that.
Right.
And so it is possible that we will see a win for Barack Obama in the Electoral College, even if he loses the popular vote. It doesn't look possible for Romney to win the Electoral College and lose the popular vote. Now, but it does seem possible the other way.
Now, I know that, of course, Democrats were outraged at what happened. happened in 2000, but I think the outrage would be far greater in 2012 if Romney gets the more votes and loses in the Electoral College. And then ISIS.
Why do you say that?
Because I think that the anger in this election is far more pronounced than it was in 2000. The anger, the vitriol I've seen in the ads, in the way the candidates address each other, the way the candidates' supporters address each other. I think the vitriol wasn't as severe as it was one after during the Florida recount, and not even close to what it is in 2012.
On the other hand, Democrats had always been critical of the Electoral College as an unnecessary anachronism from the 18th century, and they were angry about it even before the election, in which it cost them the White House. Conservatives, on the other hand, have defended the Electoral College as an institution that provides some of the ballast, the same way the Senate does provide ballast to the small d democracy, mobocracy, if you will, of the House of Representatives. So if you've defended this, how can you turn around suddenly in November of 2012 and say, oh, well, wait a minute, suddenly we don't like it anymore?
Ron, do you want to address a little bit about the possibility of a 269 to 269 tie?
It's really remote, but there is the possibility, because of the 538 number of the Electoral College, that they could divide evenly between the two candidates. It's not likely. It's maybe a 1% possibility. There's also the remote chance that Mitt Romney could win 270 electoral votes and then lose one because the state of Nebraska and the state of Maine divide their Electoral College vote among their congressional districts. So we saw in 2008 that the congressional district around Omaha, Nebraska, Obamaha, if you will, went for Barack Obama, and therefore he got one Electoral College vote from the state of Nebraska, even though he lost the state overall.
And if we, as long as we're going to talk about things that scare the heck out of people, there's also been 11 cases in American history where electors were faithless electors.
Faithless electors. I've
just seen a faith I can't forget the time or place.
Here's the difference, though. The electors nowadays are slates that are put up by the candidates themselves. They are not people who are chosen for being outstanding citizens. They're people who are chosen for their partisan loyalty. The likelihood of a faithless elector in an election where the Electoral College is closely divided.
If you remember in 2000, one Al Gore elector from the District of Columbia decided not to vote. Now, of course,
but that was in protest of the rest of what was going on.
Probably.
So I'm just saying the idea of the faithless elector has often been somebody who popped up and voted, you know, for George Wallace from a southern state instead of voting for the person who had won the state. And this can happen, but it's not likely.
Right.
What is much more likely is that we would get a divergence of the outcome in the popular vote and that of the Electoral College.
Before we move to the post-election thing, we're still talking about the week before the election, and the Republican Party seems to have what I think is a curious strategy of either insisting or bluffing, depending on your point of view, on states like Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Minnesota. They're spending more money in those states, heretofore blue states. I mean, I don't think anybody has it even close, any of those three states.
Well, somewhat close.
Well, somewhat.
Some of the polls are 2 or 3 percentage points, if you believe them.
Right. None of those three states we just mentioned. First of all, Minnesota hasn't voted for a Republican since 72.
And Michigan not since 1988.
And Pennsylvania since 1988.
So it seems unlikely, but nonetheless, they are advertising in those states in part because they can.
Because they have so much money.
Because they have enough money to advertise anywhere they choose
perhaps
to do so.
Because all the available time in these battleground states are already bought and sold.
Exactly. And also because it can give them more of a case to make that the map is expanding in their favor, that they're not just limited to the battleground states and the ones they already have won, but that Mitt Romney is on the march, and Mitt Romney is on the march in Pennsylvania, and he's on the march in Michigan, and he's on the march in New Mexico, and on we go, and we're going to win Minnesota, by golly. And that is part of the narrative that they are putting forward in the media, and it's a pretty strong narrative.
I was just going to ask you that. There seems to have been a narrative since the first October 3rd debate in Denver, which Mitt Romney inarguably won that debate.
Especially in terms of the impression that he made on swing voters.
And so the question is Romney's momentum, is it real, or is it just giving the illusion that, yes, if we don't win Ohio, we still have Minnesota, Michigan, or Pennsylvania to fall back on?
Of course, they would never concede they weren't going to win Ohio. But these are possibly alternative strategies, in the sense that if Obama doesn't win Ohio, he might be able to make up for it by winning, say, Virginia in one other state. In the Romney case, What's the other state? If he doesn't win Ohio, he has to reach out to one of these lightly blue states that we've just ticked
Wisconsin,
off.
Wisconsin, maybe.
And well, Wisconsin is a battleground state. Yeah. We could just talk about that in terms of the same question mark as Colorado, Nevada, Iowa, all the other battleground states that we've been listing for months and months now. You could just go ahead and put, you know, one other state into that category, like Michigan, like Pennsylvania, and that gives them an alternative. The other thing that the Romney people are doing in Ohio is they are going very hard at the issue that seems to have been a pillar of the Obama position.
And that's obviously the auto bailout, and obviously Romney is trying to do his best to discredit the president on that it's really not helped the economy, that more jobs are being outsourced. And yet, it was interesting, in a sense, when Romney had those two ads about Jeep going to China.
Obama took GM and Chrysler into bankruptcy and sold Chrysler to Italians who are going to build Jeeps in China. Mitt Romney will fight for every American job.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
There was another ad as well, and both companies almost seemed to do like a Candy Crowley in that they were fact-checking.
No, Governor. Not true, Governor.
Right.
Yeah. It was a bad moment for Romney, I thought.
Yeah, I think I agree.
To have the auto executives come out and repudiate him.
And they weren't
way.
Doing it because they're Obama people. They're saying, look, the truth is we're not closing down factories in North America to move jobs to China. This is a separate thing completely, and these ads are not true. And this puts Romney in a terrible position because the last thing he wants to do is get into a street fight with Chrysler and GM, and that's exactly what's happened. And the Obama campaign just sits back and watch.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of the fact-checking and a lot of the journalistic finger-wagging at the Romney people for that ad. Well, the next thing they did was they came out with Lee Iacocca. Now, you and I are old enough to remember Lee Iacocca. This was a guy who was an auto executive 50 years ago, flirted with running for president himself in the 1980s, and was seen by a lot of people as the perfect example of somebody who could come out of corporate America and be a successful political figure. As it turned out, he never pulled the trigger and he never ran. So he's now out there saying, oh, well, nobody would be better for the American auto industry than Mitt Romney, and I'm Lee Iacocca. I'm synonymous with the American auto industry.
And don't forget, Mitt Romney had a very close relative named George Romney, who was the president of the American Motors before he was elected governor of Michigan in 62. So Romney comes from this auto family. If Romney loses Ohio, and my guess is that he does, it's my guess that's the auto bailout that could be the difference. Ron, David Axelrod's mustache notwithstanding, let's go state by state, the battleground states. Who wins Nevada?
I think Nevada sticks with the president.
I agree.
I think it does because of the Hispanic vote there, which is better organized than it is in a lot of states. The SEIU and some of the culinary workers and some of the other people there are very good at getting their people out to vote. And Harry Reid, who was not seriously injured in a car accident last week, is very good at getting out Democratic voters and also blunts just a little bit the huge Mormon appeal that otherwise Mitt Romney would have in the Mormon parts of Nevada.
I agree. All those reasons, I agree with you. Nevada goes for Obama.
But Colorado.
Now, Colorado, went very close for President Obama. The Democrats have been talking about it, trying to win it for years, but they really hadn't won in a long, long time. I think Romney wins Colorado.
I do, too. I believe he will. I think it reverts to its essential Western characteristics. What about Iowa? Tough call in Iowa.
I think Obama keeps Iowa.
I'm a little surprised to hear you say that. I think Iowa is one of the toughest jump balls in the country. It went back and forth in the George W. Bush elections. I wouldn't be surprised to see it go Republican. That's my thumb at this point. And right across the state line, you're into the state of Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, I think the president wins Wisconsin. Yes, Paul Ryan is on the ticket. Yes, Scott Walker did win a recall, and that was pretty impressive showing for the Republicans as well, although it never really translated in the presidential race. And Wisconsin hasn't gone for a Republican president since Ronald Reagan in 1984. I think Wisconsin stays Democratic.
Barely, though. Barely.
Oh, yeah.
My guess is that this is a toss-up state, as a toss-up state can be. And although in the end, I would say it's a little hard to see Mitt Romney getting over the top, even with Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan has not been enough of the character of the campaign. And in the end, I think that people there who voted for Scott Walker, some of the people who voted for Scott Walker this summer, will vote for Barack Obama, and he'll hold on.
Taking our magical mystery tour a little further east, the big state of Ohio. No Republican has ever won the presidency without Ohio. But more importantly, in the past century plus, Ohio has gone with the winner every time except twice. 1944, because John Bricker, the governor of Ohio, was on the Republican ticket, and Nixon beat Kennedy in Ohio in 1960. But Ohio goes with the winner. I really question whether Obama could win it 4 years ago. I still thought the Republican non-Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati exurbs and stuff like that would go Republican, I think Obama takes Ohio.
If he does, it's by the narrowest of margins. If we can ask for one dispensation, just one state we don't call, I would say it should be Ohio, because to call Ohio, in my math, in my calculations, is to call the race. If Obama wins Ohio, I believe he is being reelected president. If he doesn't win Ohio, it's anybody's guess.
Yes, I mean, you could also make the case that if Romney loses Ohio, he has to win all these other states we're talking about.
That's why I don't think he can do it.
Right, because he's not going to win. He may not win Wisconsin, and he may not win Iowa. Go up north a little bit, northeast to New Hampshire.
Another tough call. It is one of Mitt Romney's home states. They do like him there. He did very, very well in the primary there. I could imagine him winning New Hampshire even as he loses the presidency.
I agree. I think Romney does win New Hampshire. Let's go down south a little bit to Virginia.
Another really tough call, but my guess here is that the eastern seaboard states, the southern states, that would be Virginia, North Carolina, and Florida, all go to Mitt Romney.
I agree. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why. I mean, look, if Romney loses Florida, then I say it's over. He has to win Florida.
Absolutely.
I think he does win Florida. I think he wouldn't. I think of the three, North Carolina would be the biggest margin for him. And I think he wins Virginia, too, even though the polls there have been shown it to be neck and neck.
That's right. Very much neck and neck. And with one exception, the most recent polls that I've seen show the state coming back a little bit to Obama, where it had been a month ago before the first debate, and maybe sliding a little bit back in the president's direction. In the end, I guess I would say I think Romney pulls it out.
And Ron, Republican retention of the House, Democratic retention of the Senate?
Barely in the Senate. I think the Senate will be 51 Democrats. I think they lose Montana. They lose North Dakota.
Nebraska?
They lose Nebraska. Those three. But I think they get back a vote in Maine, where the Angus King will vote with the Democrats. And I think they're going to take Massachusetts.
I do, too. I agree with all those as well. And the House, the Democrats need 25 seats in the House.
10 at the best.
At the very best.
I don't think they get more than 10.
I don't think they get double digits. There are a lot of Democrats who are retiring in southern districts that the Republicans will pick up. And redistricting, while it has hurt Republicans in states like Illinois and Maryland, it certainly helped the Republicans in states like Ohio. I think it may be a single-digit Democratic gain, which is pretty remarkable considering 2 years ago it was 63 seats gain for the Republicans, and you think a lot of that would change 2 years later, like a correction. I'm assuming we'll know what's going to happen next Tuesday.
But even if we don't know who is going to be the next president of the United States, we'll be back for next week's political podcast, because that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Please, try not to make the little girl cry this week, Ken.
Don't call me little girl.
And join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR. So don't bother me, man, I ain't got no time. I'm on my way to see that girl. Nothing matters in this whole wide world when you're in love with a jerk.